Did you know that empirical data has linked parenting styles experienced during childhood with elements such as academic, professional, and even marital and familial success during adult life? Research has correlated certain parental approaches with things like positive self-esteem, resilience, innovativeness, and healthy personal well-being, while other styles of child-rearing seem connected to problems in adulthood, such as dysfunctional relationships, lowered self-esteem, and even components such as substance abuse. How can you make a difference in your child's life? Find out today on Return to Eden. Everybody, welcome to Return to Eden. I'm Allie Hinson. Today we're going to be talking about parenting approaches and how they impact our children later in adult life. Let me start by introducing my guests. He's a multi-decade force within realms of Christian radio and television, chief executive officer of Skywatch TV and Defender Publishing and Whispering Ponies Ranch, best-selling author, and also my dad. Please welcome Tom Horn. And she's the chief executive officer of Whispering Ponies Ranch, co-host for Simply His, author of No Fences, It Started with a Plastic Pony, and lifelong ministerial partner and wife of Tom Horn, also my mom. Please welcome Nita Horn.
It's good to be here.
I'm really glad to have you guys on today, and I really appreciate you being here. It's fun to be able to talk to you guys as my parents on this show because I actually have memories of the way you guys were as parents when I was a kid. So it's kind of a fun topic, but I'll start by talking about psychological research, which shows there are four categories that they break parenting styles into. There's authoritarian, which is very rigid and very do what I said because I said when I said. And that's kind of that style. It doesn't allow the child a lot of autonomy, but it's very strong in structure. Then there's authoritative, which allows some structure, some autonomy, and it's a pretty good blend between the two. Most empirical data shows this particular style of parenting to create the most resilient and well-rounded adults later in life. And then there's permissive, which is kind of, most parents who are permissive are aware that they're permissive. They will say, oh, I'm a pushover, or oh, my kids walk all over me. They may have really good intentions, but they struggle to create any kind of structure or boundaries, and their children are often allowed to get by with quite a bit. And then the uninvolved form of parenting, which most parents who are uninvolved are unaware of the pattern they're actually setting in their children's life. And it's, well, it's aptly named, it's uninvolved. And so I remember as a kid, you know, being able to come into a room, and first of all, I'll say this for Tom, for my dad, he would say, you can say anything you want to say if you say it with the right attitude. So I could come in and I couldn't say, well, this is a bunch of junk and I don't agree, that would get me in trouble. But I could come in and say, Dad, you said this, and I feel like this, and I want to know why you said that. And you would take the time to explain to me not only what the rule was, but the why behind it. And when we take the time to explain the why to our kids, they're able to take this lesson and apply it to other situations in life later on. So not only are they learning one specific rule, but they're learning a principle mm-hmm. that then generalizes out to other things in life later on. And that falls into the authoritative parenting category, which is correlated with the highest levels of successful, resilient adults in later life. And so I wanted to kind of talk to you guys about that and get your take. I know that for you, as a pastor for years, you did a lot of family counseling, a lot of marriage counseling. You've just been very involved in these realms. And so I know that you not only approach this from experience as a parent, but you also have this experience as a counselor and a long-term pastor. So I'd like to offer you the opportunity to weigh in on that, and then I'll ask Mom some questions after that.
Well, sure. Our family was a kick in the pants, really, when you think about it, because as we're talking about the difference between dismissive or permissive, this is just true for all parents. I think if you're a caring parent, you try to find the balance, mm-hmm. not to be too permissive so that then the kids can take advantage of that and learn bad habits. But on the other hand, not to be overly authoritative and setting in motion draconian rules and all those kinds of things that make it really difficult for kids to develop their natural talents and interests. And by the way, Another thing to keep in mind is every child is different. There's no such thing as a carbon copy set of rules that would apply to every child. So like when you kids were growing up, the way I would treat Joe was different than the way I would treat you with respect to how I would communicate or how I'm trying to draw you forward into becoming, you know, a better person, a model person. So on the one hand, you had Joe, who our dear late friend, Brother Fuller.
Yeah.
He dubbed Joe a hickey flicker.
Yep.
Now, I had no clue what is a hickey flicker, you know. Basically, it was just describing Joe bouncing off the walls every time anybody seen him, you know, going through the room like a cyclone.
Yeah, that was just his kind of, it was his own made-up word for jumping all over the place. And
yeah, so Joe basically drove all of us into having a nervous breakdown. And when we recovered from that, the goal was to try to figure out how to help Joe develop his numerous interests in different things. And what's ironic is when you look back today, all three of you kids grew up to be involved with things that you could see in your childhood as patterns of your interests and behavior and whatever. So with Joe, I mean, he was always he got in trouble in school because he's always tapping on the table and whatever. Yeah. And even the teacher said, I think that boy's going to grow up to be a musician because he's got rhythm in his head. Yeah. And then he was always inventing characters and voices and had one of the very first VHS cameras, which must have been that big, right?
Yeah.
Carrying that thing around, making his own home movies and doing voiceover work. And then you watch him, and as he grows up, he becomes an award-winning musician, a guitarist. Today, he's one of the producers at Skywatch Television. He's the host. So you can see all these things that he was doing as a kid, he was actually learning. And if you want to even spiritualize it, you might say that God put within Joe the gifts and talents he would need so that later on he could fulfill what God made him to do. I think that's true for everybody, but I can see that in my own kids. Now, on the other hand, you had Donna, your younger sister. And Donna, growing up, I always said, this kid has never met an argument she can't win. And she was just like the most challenging kid ever. No matter what you had to say, but Dad, now wait a minute.
Right.
Now she would just want to get into a big debate about everything. I'm like, girl, you're wearing me out.
From every angle. From every angle.
Yep, from every angle. And yet, if you look at her now, she grew up to be one of the best apologists that I've known, a person who can argue in favor of a particular theological point of view. And she does the research, and she is great at doing it, and she makes sure that she's convinced herself first of what side of the line to come down on, and then she becomes very effective at arguing that point. So you could see with her being a kid, in other words, the way God designed her was different than the way he made you or Joe, but it fulfills a purpose today. And then there was Allie.
So I have no idea what he's getting ready to say.
No. No, but I mean, here you were. You love Nancy Drew. You made your own Nancy Drew clothing.
That's true,
as a kid. You ran around with these little books and a spyglass, right? You'd see her in church, you know, going through church with a spyglass and writing down notes and figuring out the latest mystery, right?
Yeah, I was finding clues in places where there were no clues to be found. Like, they're all having church, and I'm like, hold on, this means something.
You grew up, and you became a credentialed private investigator, and now you run the investigative arm for Skywatch TV and Defender Publishing. So again, no cookie-cutter approach to the way you would communicate. Communication is very important, but it has to be kind of, you got to meet that kid where they are, where they're coming from, and then, you know, try to learn how to be a parent while at the same time you're trying to teach your kids how to grow up.
You know, parenting, this is a huge subject and cannot be covered in 20 minutes of chit-chat, no matter who you are. Having said that, kids don't come with a manual, and we know that. If they did, it'd be a whole lot easier.
Yep.
Page 13 is what you do win. The other thing is exactly right. They do not follow the same style of discipline. So like with Allie, the discipline for her was very light because she listened and she didn't challenge as much. Joe, we know that one corner that had his crayon marks when he would sneak crayon. I mean, just the one corner was so dirty because he spent a lot of time there. And Donna was a little more like, you could not approach either way, because I thought, okay, I it's either Allie or Joe, and I had it down, right? Here comes Donna, and her approach was totally different. And I remember one day I was giving her a little spanking for something she did, and she got mad at me. She goes, I don't like it when you spank me. It makes me want to get meaner. I says, well, then what works then? You tell me. She says, well, I hate writing sentences. I said, good. Over there. And it worked. So I'm just saying.
Right.
Parenting is just so different with each kid. So I want to make that important note, because I really think that sometimes we make mistakes by trying to think every kid's going to learn the same method. Mm-hmm. That's just not real. Make a note about wisdom and understanding. So like when you're correcting your child, you made the comment that not only did he tell you what was wrong, he explained why.
Yeah.
So the telling of the what, the rules, is knowledge. The why is the wisdom. So when he is explaining to you why, he's instilling wisdom, mm-hmm. so that you can make an educated decision, and then you get to pay the consequences. And sometimes you did. Well, all of you mm-hmm. did.
Sure.
So that's just my little spin on the question that you originally asked. Why would it be important to take time? So I think that's...
Taking time is a commitment. We all are living increasingly busy and hectic mm-hmm. lives. And you just have to say, I will take time to invest mm-hmm. myself in my child. Shut the TV off, do whatever. Give up one of your bowling nights or whatever it is you do. I don't bowl, but and spend time with your kids. You remember when your kids were little, Nita and I both did this, where we would take each one of you by yourself on a date day. So I would take Joe, let's go. We're going with Dad, right? We're going to, mm-hmm. and it would always end up buying him a rubber wrestler or whatever, but it was a date day with Dad. Or
yeah.
you and I would do the mm-hmm. same thing, or me and Donna, and you guys also did that with your mom. Anyway, the bottom line is, having open lines of communication, yeah. conversation, not always when you're in trouble, but just sometimes just, hey, yeah. kid, go with me. Let's go do right. X, Y, Z.
Right.
And just spending time investing yourself in that child is one of the most important things. And being willing to listen non-judgmentally
right.
to your kids, because sometimes kids, they need to be able to talk to you, and sometimes about like the most, you know, embarrassing mm-hmm. kind of subject matter, but they need answers.
Right.
And if you're there for them, they're likely to come to you with those questions, mm-hmm. especially once they learn that they can trust
yeah.
you and you're not going to laugh at them or tell them they're stupid or whatever. And it'd be better for them to be doing that than getting their answers like today from online, right. new right. age mm-hmm. websites. What do I do about it? You know right. what I mean?
Yeah. yeah.
So it's very important.
You know, we talked several weeks ago now about medical autonomy mm-hmm. and how a lot of kids began to incrementally get medical autonomy between the ages of 13 and 16 years old, depending on the state. School districts, the state, your friends' parents, mm-hmm. all these different places are waiting with answers for your child.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't have open lines of communication with your child, and if you haven't already been laying that foundation, not only for what did I say in this instance, but why did that mm-hmm. principle apply? You know, if that foundation's not laid, when they get into the teen years, where some of these very tough questions facing our teenagers right now come up, and some of them are afraid that they can't approach their parents because they're afraid they'll get in trouble. Mm-hmm. Some don't think the parents will care. Some just think the parents are going to say no, and they haven't established that mutual rapport of, I will do what my parents say even when they said no, even if I don't agree with it, just because I respect them. You know, there's a whole different reasons that they may not approach a parent, but if you have that foundation set in place, it helps a lot when they get into these more complicated situations when they're teenagers, and the world is full of them right now,
mm-hmm.
and there's a whole lot of people out there with an answer mm-hmm. for your child mm-hmm. if your child isn't coming to you for it, and that's very scary. I remember Mom as a kid, you're talking about investing time. I'm going to tell you guys, she spent so much time with me when I was a kid. She taught me to sew. Mm-hmm. She taught me to bake. And from scratch, things like bread and pie crust and all these different things. She was doing schoolwork with me when I was really little. And I know I was young because Joe wasn't born yet.
Right.
And I was 3 1/2 when he was born. So I was really little. And I remember you being very pregnant. And I'm sitting on the table in the kitchen with that dotted line paper like they give you in mm-hmm. like preschool and kindergarten. And I remember I was writing a letter to your mom. And I'm saying, now I want to say this. And so she would spell it for me. And she'd go, you know, if I'm spelling dear, she'd D. And I'd write it on the little line with the little dotted line. Okay, now E. And we'd do that through the word dear. And then she'd say space. And I'd put my finger down. And then I'd start the next, you know. And she'd spend, I don't know how long it took her.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, it would have been so much easier to say, here's a card that, you know, Allie wants to say these things. Right. Allie says, and then she just writes it, but she took the time to go, E, A, you know, and just, she took all that time, you know, to just teach me stuff.
You were like a little character off of the Wizard of Oz Munchkin Land, because when you were, literally, when she was 1 year old, one, she's running around, she's this tall. She knew basic math. She knew everything, like her ABCs was just like, oh, so been there, done that.
That's because of her, though. That's
she had a vocabulary of, I don't know, 50 or 60 sentences. She could full on have a conversation with you, and she was one. She looked like a little gerbil. It's like, wait, are you a midget or what are you? How do you know how to do all this stuff? But again, that was totally a reflection of all of the time and effort that Nita invested in you as a child. I was off working, but, and thank God, back then, men could work and women could raise kids or vice versa, where today there's a lot of pressure on everybody to have two jobs. And I do enjoy, though, how these parents around America are saying enough is enough in the public schools.
Yeah, that's happening
a lot. And they're challenging the teacher. Yeah, now, of course, legislation's even growing out of that that protects a parent's right to determine what their kids will or won't be taught in school. So CRT, stuff like that. Where parents are resisting that, now they're getting, you know, some traction in being able to do that. And thank God for a few parents that are making that stand for their kids.
Yeah, and you know, I've noticed a cultural shift. We're talking about these four types of parenting approach. You know, there's authoritarian, authoritative, permissive, and uninvolved. And I've noticed that as you have more parents who are working outside the home, there's a rise in the permissive and the uninvolved parenting style. And it's honestly not always because somebody's, you know, too lazy to try to raise their children. Sometimes they're exhausted and they're working two or three jobs and it's everything they can do to keep food on the table. You know, it's very easy for somebody who's not in that situation to stand back and say, well, you just need to spend more time with your kids. But some of these parents are doing everything they can. And the fact that their kids are provided for is a testament to how much they love their kids. But that's where it can be helpful if those kids have access to aunts, uncles, grandparents, you know, church members you trust, teachers that you trust, you know. But kids do need an infrastructure of support. And if all they're taught is the rigidity of rules, you and I, we have seen it a lot with the pastor's kids. You know, a lot, and I'm not trying to be mean, but there's a lot of pastor's kids who are raised with a very rigid rule set. And when they get about 20, you know, there's nobody there saying you can't. So, hey, why can't I? And a lot of them,
they
struggle.
Crazy,
it's tough. It actually makes a destructive path because they didn't learn that balance of the why. And so when the rules are gone, I can do whatever I want. Well, it's tough.
You and your siblings know from experience how hard it is to be a PK, to be a preacher's kid. And all of the rules and expectations that are placed on you by board members and other people in the church. She will tell you that every time we went to a new church and I accepted a pastorate, the first thing I told the board was, look, I'm going to be coming to work for you, this church, but you don't get my family thrown into the mix. So don't tell my wife what you think she ought to do, and don't tell my kids what you think they ought to do. If you got an issue, you come to me. They're not thrown into the deal. And most of the churches respected that, not all. I remember when we were pastoring the last church that I pastored in Portland, Oregon. I won't name the church, and I won't name the board member in particular, Mr. Beardy, right? He wouldn't tell his own kids what to do, but oh my goodness, the pastor's kids. You're setting a role model for these.
You're the example.
Yeah.
It was tough. They cornered Joe a lot. Well, he was the loudest of the three of us.
Yeah.
A lot of times it was only just a matter of volume. You know what I mean? Or activity level. He was hickey flicking.
Yeah. There were times when I wanted to say, I give up. You can have him. You board members, take him out in the back of the building and teach him something, you know. But
that was not fair, though, because in a mix of kids, it was always one of ours that would be picked out as the instigator of trouble. And honestly, that was just not fair.
It was not fair, and a lot of PKs get it even
worse
because their parents are not trying to protect them from that kind of abuse. And it is unreasonable to expect certain kids in the church have to be the role model for all the other kids in the church and that kind of nonsense. So anyway, that's what I say. Our family growing up, man, it was a constant whatever. It was always interesting, to say the least.
One thing I'll say about it, though, you know, when you have that kind of pressure from the outside world, and I was pretty adamant with my own kids about this when raising my kids, and that is, when the rest of the world is hard on you, when you come home, it needs to be a safe haven.
Sure.
Don't be terrible to each other, because the rest of the world has got that... The rest of the world's already being horrible to her without your help and vice versa. And I was pretty lucky because my kids were actually very good and very respectful to each other. They had a really good relationship and they still do. And, you know, Joe and Donna are my best friends in the world. I mean, I'm thankful that we had that closeness, but I think that kind of forging from the outside, you know, kind of brings you closer together as a family.
Well, I'd say one other final thing on that is that it's very unfortunate that a lot of PKs, a lot of kids in church in general, they wind up developing a very negative attitude about church, about God. I mean, by the time they're old enough to make up their own decisions, they're like, I'm out of here. This is the dumbest thing ever, right? I don't believe in God, and I don't believe in none of this. And it's because of the treatment that they were getting from Christians, right, inside of the church. But what the Bible says about this is very true. Raise your kids in the way they should go. When they get older, they will not depart from it. Now, that implies something that is hidden to most people there, and that is when they're little bitty, up until they're, you know, maybe 10 or 11 years old, kids look to you, and that's how they know God. They see God in you. You are God, in other words, to them, in their very young minds. You represent the ultimate authority. But then, you know, James Dobson says that when they're little...
when you're 13, you put them in a barrel and seal the lid?
No, he said when they turn 13, you put them in a barrel and you feed them through a hole. When they hit 16, you plug the hole, right? So that's really true, so...
Sometimes.
Well, one thing I'll say, you know, in my studies of psychology of religion, it actually is true that during the formative years, which we're going to talk a little more about next week, between 3 and 9 years old, that's really where a lot of the psychological construct that the ability to subscribe to religion is built during that time. So for kids who have witnessed people, and especially PKs who've also seen the people who claim to be Christians, but their life does not manifest that, you know, when through these formative years, they've been put in a position where they've seen religious abuse and, you know, hypocrisy and all, just unfortunately a lot of the stuff that does go on, it can permanently interfere with their ability to subscribe to religion at the level of a psychological construct that they don't even realize they're being impacted at. And so it's really important, especially with little kids, to be good to them, to explain. When you've got these kids in VBS or in Sunday school and they're little and you're teaching them about Noah and the Ark, you're doing more to the permanent development of their ability to understand religion and develop faith in God. And this is why there's such a deep correlation between people who have trouble with religion and people who had trouble with their parental relationships, because that model does impact that psychological construct that later is what they point at their vision of God. So it really does cross over. It makes a huge difference.
Absolutely. So that when they're born, when they're little, I was saying a moment ago, you are what they know about God. And then they hit that point where you put them in a barrel and plug the hole. But then as they get older, that investment starts coming back around almost all of the time. And even if they don't want to serve God, they can't hide from him either. It's always in the back of their mind. The Holy Spirit is there knocking on the door, And it gives them their best chance at living a godly life, but also living a happy life and a sense of mission, a sense of accomplishment, a sense of purpose for why am I here, which is kind of the big cosmological question that everybody asks themselves. What's it all about? You know, why am I here?
That's an important part of identity, the idea that you belong to something bigger than you and that your life is pursuing a mission and that when you're gone, there's something left because you were here. A lot of people, that's the reason their greatest fear is dying because what do I leave when I go? That's a huge fear for people. You know, was this all just a waste of time and energy? You know, that's a hopeless way to live.
It is hopeless, So
I can't imagine going through life without God, because life is hard enough. And if we had to do it without the hope of knowing that there's something beyond this, talk about depressing, honestly. And I don't mean that in a condescending way. That's just a tough reality to think about. I've said many times that what happens in the home happens in society. I believe that what we do in our household has the power to change society as a whole. Yeah. So I really want to thank you both for being here today. Thank you, Tom, Nita, Mom, Dad. I'm still figuring out what I'm supposed to call them when we're here. Yeah. To everyone in the studio, thank you for being here today. I'm Allie Hinson. This is Return to Eden, and we'll see you next week.
Millions of Americans are suffering a health crisis epidemic right now. Trouble with digestion, diabetes, chronic fatigue, hormone imbalances, depression, autoimmune disease, and more. The truth for many is that the real culprit of modern disease is simply a lack of vitally important nutrition. It is well established that the food we eat today has but just a fraction of the nutrition it once carried. Over the last 6 decades, there has been an alarming fall in nutrient density across the board, from fruits and vegetables to meat, dairy and eggs, due to soil depletion and intensive agricultural growing and harvesting methods. This means that less and less key nutrients like riboflavin, thiamine, niacin, fiber, copper, vitamin E, and phosphorus, just to name a few, are present in what we eat. What's worse, almost all of our food is laden with poisonous herbicides, pesticides, and antibiotics, which destroy our body's microbiome, the health of our digestive tracts, where 80% of our immune system resides. In short, it means that we're not being nourished properly. And when you add the constant exposures to toxic chemicals we were never meant to ingest, our bodies are destined for the rise of disease and dysfunction. But what if I told you it didn't have to be this way? At Eden's Essentials, we provide the absolute best and cleanest nutrient-dense whole food supplements and personal care products on the market, derived directly from non-genetically modified foods grown from clean soil, free of pesticides, herbicides, and biosediments to achieve the highest quality nutrition possible. So what is the Eden's Essentials difference? Well, many supplements on the market are packaged, labeled, and presented as healthy or even organic. But under the microscope, the ingredients may tell a different story. From expensive products being nutritionally void of what is advertised on the label, or using synthetic vitamins that our bodies struggle to absorb, to containing the same pesticides and herbicides we've already mentioned being used on foods, it's difficult to know what products are actually safe or as advertised. At Eden's Essentials, our products undergo a series of the most complete and rigorous raw material tests in the industry to ensure that our customers receive the highest quality bioabsorbable nutrition possible. We take pride in offering the most nutritionally dense supplements and the purest personal hygiene products available today. Our desire is to help serve the needs of everyday people so that they can achieve the highest degree of health possible. From our full-spectrum, immunity-boosting fermented mushrooms, some of nature's most powerful antiviral nutrition, to our 100% fermented organic whole beetroot powder for cardiovascular support, and our special Eden's blood sugar support for assisting proper insulin regulation, you can nourish your body like never before. So revolutionize your health, maximize your immunity, and restore your vitality. Experience for yourself the Eden's Essentials difference and join the Eden's family. Visit edensessentials.com today.